everyone. I'm Emmeline Pat Dahlstrom from Spacebase, a social enterprise focused on catalyzing the airspace entrepreneurial ecosystem in New Zealand to solve challenges on Earth and beyond. You're listening to the Spacebase podcast. Today, I'm interviewing Kate Breach, an aerospace technical specialist at the New Zealand Space Agency. Kate is an aeronautical engineer who has worked on military fighter jets and helicopters in New Zealand and the UK, led a team of UN military armistice inspectors in the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea, represented New Zealand at international space meetings, including the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, and regulated space rockets and satellite launch from New Zealand. In her current role, Kate engages with New Zealand space companies, universities, international space companies, and other national space agencies to help further develop the New Zealand space sector, providing technical input and advice to the New Zealand Space Agency. Kate graduated from University of Canterbury with a Bachelor of Engineering with honors before working as an engineering officer in both the Royal New Zealand Air Force and the Royal Air Force in the UK, where she led a team of engineers working on Eurofighter fighter jets. She holds a Master's of International Relations and has worked in corporate business development and project management roles and in foreign policy for New Zealand before joining the New Zealand Space Agency. In this interview, we're going to talk about Kate's personal aerospace journey from New Zealand, UK, and the world. Welcome, Kate.
Thanks so much, Emmeline. It's so great to be here, and I'm really, really honored to be invited to come on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time. And so I guess to just start the interview, like, where are you from New Zealand, and where did you grow up?
So I am a mainlander, so from the South Island, and very much from the southern part of the South Island. So I'm from West Otago originally, grew up in a little rural area, very close to the Southland border, but we called it West Otago. And then I went to high school in Dunedin, and my family moved from Dunedin and then up to Christchurch, and I went to university in Christchurch. So definitely South Island girl.
Oh, very interesting. And when you were growing up, what were you most interested in?
When I was growing up, I was very passionately interested in space. So that happened really young for me. I, from about the age of 13 or 14, decided that I wanted to be an astronaut. And that completely shaped pretty much my career, everything from that point on. So yeah, I think I'm younger than that. I think I probably went through a bunch of other little things, but probably I stuck on astronaut at about sort of 13, 14.
Wow, but what was the influence? Like, why?
Well, so at the time, and it's like a renaissance we're seeing of a time when I was that age we're seeing now, which was regular space launch. So we were seeing regular space shuttle launches, and they would, at my school, they would put it up on TV so we could watch the launches. There was a lot of media about all of the different crews that were going up. I just got really excited by it. I think I saw a couple of movies too. I'm going to shout out to a really old school movie called Space Camp.
Yes.
I think I saw Space Camp and I just went, oh, this is it. It's so exciting. I want to do this.
So I want to ask you, Star Wars or Star Trek?
Well, I appreciate both. Good storylines, but definitely Star Trek.
Right. So most people also, when they're passionate about something, they were influenced by people, like earlier on in their career. Is that something that happened to you?
It wasn't actually. Well, it wasn't that I was influenced by that passion being driven by someone in particular that I knew or a role model or anything. But I was really, really grateful that at school I had a wonderful teacher who, you know, for a 13 or 14 year old girl from Dunedin at the time, when I said I want to be an astronaut, she didn't go, you can't be an astronaut. There's no New Zealand astronauts. There's, you know, she said, yeah, why not? That's really great. And these are the types of things you could be doing at school that might help. And I think I remember her name was Mrs. Mills. And I remember that she said, Kate, if there's anyone who could do that, it will be you. And what wonderful support and just encouragement from a teacher. So yeah, that I would say she probably was one of my earliest supports, not a role model, but an enormous support that let me keep following this all the way through high school.
Yeah, that's really amazing when people vouch for you at a very young age, which means also that thinking about parents, like if their kids are really gung-ho for something, that it's really great to encourage them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, definitely. I was also pretty lucky. So with that support at school, I started doing more projects that were focused on space, and I wrote away to NASA. So back in the days before there was the internet, I actually wrote a letter to NASA in the US and asked them how I could become an astronaut.
Wow.
And amazingly, they wrote back to me. So
oh, wow.
When I was, I think I was 14, I got a huge pack from NASA talking all about different pathways. I now realize it was all aimed at American students, but that's it. What it did was just encourage me even more, and it showed me the different types of pathways into, yeah, at the time, the NASA astronaut program. And it is what drove me down my career path, basically. So thank you, NASA, for taking the time to send a letter to a young girl in Dunedin, New Zealand.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, space also is kind of like, it's a broad industry. Is there a specific part of the space industry or space that you're really, really are focused on?
So my work is quite broad now, and you meant I'm now in a new role with the space agency. So I work in sector development, I'm a technical specialist, aerospace specialist, providing that sort of advice into the agency, engaging with the different New Zealand space companies, and that means that I'm quite broad in the engagement that I do across different parts of the space sector. Personally, I am incredibly passionate about space exploration and human spaceflight. Space exploration now is not just about human spaceflight. We see these amazing robotic missions, so I get really excited about what I see being developed in New Zealand at universities and other startup companies around robotics and aspects that can support space exploration. And that's all the way through from launch to satellite to, you know, communications to in orbit or in space activities of robotics or communications, basically.
Yeah, no, that's great. So you started out by doing a bachelor's in mechanical engineering.
Yes.
And so was that like a choice? Like, how did that choice come about and your passion with space?
So really interestingly, when I got my letter from NASA and it told me the different ways I could become an astronaut, I was still focused on this at high school. The options were sort of becoming a payload specialist, where you could do study in a particular scientific area, or you could be, for a space shuttle, they need pilots to pilot the space shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that and went, I want to be the pilot of the space shuttle.
Ah.
So from there, that gave you advice, obviously all targeted at American students, but that you needed to be a fighter jet pilot to be considered for the space shuttle program. And that drove my focus in my next steps for my career to the Air Force in New Zealand, where we did have fighter jets at the time. And so I, with my parents, wonderfully supportive parents, went along to the Royal New Zealand Air Force recruiting and asked them, how do I, at the age, I think I was 16 at the time, how do I become a pilot? And they gave a lot of great suggestions, and one thing they suggested was, it's great to go in when you've had a little bit more life experience. I was pretty shy, so I think they were just saying, maybe once you're a little bit, you know, more comfortable, think about joining the Air Force. And they suggested going to get a degree that might help me in my pilot selection and future career if I was able to become a pilot. And they suggested engineering, and that just made me look at engineering. And again, I had wonderful support at school, where my teacher, the same teacher, connected me with some materials released by, I think it was Chartered Engineers of New Zealand at the time, it's now Engineering New Zealand, about women in engineering. So just a couple of videos, and I went, great, this is all lining up.
Wow. So did that, your degree, did that lead to getting your Royal New Zealand Air Force job?
It did, yes. So I did my degree. I put myself through university. There was there are now programs with the RNZAF where you can get sponsored to go through your degree. At the time, they had stopped doing that, but so I was doing my degree on my own. But then in my final year, went through selection with the Royal New Zealand Air Force, trying to be a pilot, but very close to graduating with an engineering degree. At the time, and it's very competitive to become a pilot. Unfortunately, I didn't quite make I think they took 12 that year, and I was number 20 on the list. But what did happen is I got offered, after going through the same sort of selection criteria for an officer, they offered me engineering officer because I was about to have an engineering degree. And as disappointing as it was not to be selected as a pilot, I you know, was now incredibly passionate about the Air Force and flying and all of those sorts of things. A bit of a, I guess, a maturation on my astronaut dreams. And so I accepted the offer and became an engineering officer in the Royal New Zealand Air Force.
And what were your responsibilities? Like, so what does the job entail?
So in my first role, I was a structural repair officer. So I was actually designing repairs to the airframe and structural elements of the fighter aircraft that we had. So they were quite, they're two different types. So yeah, it was very much using my degree. It was a lot of, you know, calculation, stress analysis, and yeah, designing repairs to these, to fighter aircraft. So quite a lot at a young age, quite a lot of responsibility. Had some great mentors as well in the Air Force who were sort of teaching me, but also, you know, providing that room so that I had the ability to take on the responsibility. And yeah, it was fantastic. Some amazing responsibility at a really young age, and also that really in-depth technical work. So that was quite focused for the first few years of my career. And then I left the Royal New Zealand Air Force. So there was obviously a change in the fighter jets because of political changes. They were retired. The strike force was disbanded. And so I actually left and eventually went to the Royal Air Force in the UK.
How did you make that leap?
It's interesting. Because we were, Commonwealth people, we can, at the time, it may be different now, but at the time you were able to quite easily join the Royal Air Force if you've been, if you're a member of the Commonwealth, but also if you're also quite well trained, as the Kiwi Air Force are very considered very well trained, which is, you know, fantastic sign of that, you know, excellent professionalism out of the RNZAF. And yeah, so we were kind of readily grabbed by the Royal Air Force, and there were a bunch of pilots and then one engineer who joined the Royal Air Force very shortly after that, back in 2001, showing my age. I'm still young then, don't worry. And yeah, so that was my transition. Was, I guess, pretty smooth compared to having to start from the beginning, but obviously like an enormous change to go from a small Air Force and then into a really really big Air Force.
And is your responsibilities very similar to what you were doing in New Zealand or not?
No, pretty different. So I did end up, my main role that I had there was working on the first Royal Air Force squadron of Eurofighter fighter jets, so the Eurofighter Typhoon. And that's a very different role. So it was, you hold, there's still a lot of technical elements, but you hold a lot more responsibility for management and managing a big team. So I ended up having a team in the end of around about 70 technicians of different, so all the different sorts of technicians like avionics and structures and armament type technicians as well. And managing, trying to keep the aircraft flying, to do the schedule repairing, to do fault diagnosis when things aren't working, working really closely with the designers because we were the first ever squadron to be operating in the RAF. So I was super lucky to work with part of the team that were designing software, that had done structures. It's a huge project, so you're only talking to one or two of like an enormous team across Europe. But yeah, it was really exciting. A lot of interaction with the air crew, a lot of forging new pathways, learning. I became more of a systems engineer because this thing had like 72 flying computers. So,
wow.
So it was amazing. Technically, a huge, huge challenge, but like super interesting. And then all of these other aspects as well of managing a big team, of having really kind of high pressure, high profile milestones we needed to hit. Yeah, it was really, I would say it was sort of the making of you, and in little ways it was like sort of the best of times and the worst of times. It was a lot of work, but it really grounded my technical expertise across an enormous amount of systems, I think. So that really has sort of given me such a great basis and a lot of technology that we are now seeing, and now smaller size that we now see on space, in space, spacecraft and satellites, but also, you know, some elements are very similar that we might see on space launch vehicles as well.
Yeah. And I'm curious, being female, was that something that was very common in the Royal Air Force, either in New Zealand or the UK, or were there challenges that you encountered?
It wasn't very common in either, I would say. However, there were some more senior female engineering officers in the Royal New Zealand Air Force. There were more women in engineering in the RAF, but still a very small percentage. It was a very big organisation when I joined it. But still, I mean, well under, I would say, for engineering, it would be under 10% would be female. I never really kind of twigged that it was an issue all the way through the early parts of my career, I think. But you do start to realise that, you know, you're not seeing a lot of women. You don't have a big cadre of female colleagues. You have a huge cadre of male colleagues.
Right.
I was super lucky that I had my boss, direct boss, on the Eurofighter squadron was a woman as well. So we had two of us were heading the big engineering team with another guy at my level too. So that was fantastic to have a female boss. But yes, there were challenges. There were definitely challenges in both of the air forces I've been in. And it is a lot about just, you know, being that minority.
Yep.
You come across a lot of challenges. I try not to focus on them too much because there's a lot of positive. I had some wonderful male colleagues, some wonderful male bosses. It just would have been, and I hope to see this, like, so much better to have even more female colleagues and female bosses.
As an aside, did you actually ever pursue flying at all?
So I tried again in the Kiwi Air Force, and again didn't quite make the cut. So I think I at that point I was still pretty young, but I sort of went, that's just not going to be for me then, which, you know, I'm sort of sad about, because I think if I had maybe then tried to take it up at that time as a hobby or something like that, maybe I would have got to, you know, be much more of a recreational pilot or something like that. But no, I never have. So I've done it. I've done some flying.
It's never too late.
It is never too late. It is never too late.
Especially with all of the electric flight planes now that are starting.
Yeah, I'm super lucky that I have actually been able to fly a lot of aircraft, not as a qualified pilot, but, you know, I've flown in fighter aircraft. I've been dogfighting in a Eurofighter. I've flown helicopters with a pilot beside me or in the front of me. So yeah, I've enjoyed doing that. And yeah, maybe something that I'll pursue. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So the other side of your background as well is that you did a master's in international relations.
Yeah.
When did that happen, kind of like during your career, and why did you choose this combination between engineering and, basically more on the policy and management side?
I think it happened when a little later in my career. So I'd been, I left the Royal Air Force. I'd been in the military for about 10 years in total, and I had a break where I ended up doing some contracting work in corporate type roles across a lot of different industries. And then when I came back, I made the decision to come back into the Royal New Zealand Air Force for a role that would be using some skill sets that I'd gained in the corporate world, which is much more around commercial negotiations, broader project management. So I'd done a lot more project management, and that sort of really the face-to-face interfacing. And when I came back into the Royal New Zealand Air Force, I got just really fascinated around some of the strategic things that were happening around the world, geopolitics. I ended up, as you mentioned, I went to Korea with the Royal New Zealand Air Force on a UN, not peacemakers, I think you may have said that. It was a group of monitors, so it's sort of peacekeepers, except there's only an armistice, not peace, so they do a similar role monitoring the disaster. Demilitarized zone in Korea. And so all of that being much more engaged in quite highly visible geopolitically strategic parts of the world got me really interested in foreign affairs, international relations. So I already started doing an international relations master's out of interest because I was very interested in it personally. And then after doing that role in Korea, just engaging with so many different countries and seeing the amazing influence New Zealand can have, I, you know, sort of decided that I wanted to pursue that for a little bit as well.
So you mentioned that you're a consultant and you work more in a business and management capacity as a diplomat. Again, how does this balance with your technical and engineering skills and experience, and like how do you leverage kind of like both sides?
That's a really good question, and it's something I really I always want to try and explain to people who, especially young people who are thinking about engineering, is that you can be more than just a technical engineer.
Yeah.
And my interests, and I enjoyed the technical engineering, and I did a lot of really great jobs in that. But I really enjoyed people interfacing. I'm a real people person.
Mm.
I love people interfacing. I like the challenge. I'm super organized, which is again something that comes from engineering. I think that sort of gets developed in you, so you become quite a structured manager and planner. And that for me to then be able to use that and sort of use more of my people side as well, that I love, was a really great great crossover into business, into corporate world, and it is a balance. So there is it isn't very normal to have the balance of that analytical engineering type skill set,
yeah,
but also having it with the people side and negotiations and communications. But for me, I need the balance, so I enjoy both. Sometimes the roles I've had have been only one or the other, and sometimes the roles can be a mixture, which is kind of the sweet spot for me. And I think that's really important to know, that there's so many different things you can do with engineering. Once you can take it to different career pathways, you can use the skills that you get in engineering to really help you become incredibly successful in different aspects, including business, including project management and yeah, different industries.
We fast forward to today, and so you're currently working for the New Zealand Space Agency, and you kind of like touched a little bit in the beginning what you were doing there, but maybe if you can just expound on what your role is and what does a day in your job look like.
Okay. I've now moved into a second role in the Space Agency. I've been with them for a year now. So I started out on the regulatory team. So the Space Agency regulates all space activities from New Zealand. And so I started out mostly engaging with a launch license holder. So at the moment, that's Rocket Lab is the main one, but also involved in the regulation of satellites as well. So that team is a very busy team, because New Zealand, which is wonderful, New Zealand has a lot of space activities that we do. So that's quite a structured role. So again, that's a really great way to draw on all of those organizational and compliance requirements that you have to build as an engineer, is a great translation into regulating. And then I was very lucky very recently, the current role that I'm in was created. So this is the first time this role has been staffed, and that's for a technical specialist in aerospace to work in the sector development. So to work with New Zealand space companies or startups or research institutes, universities, and provide advice on what they're doing and into the Space Agency for things like developing new policies, and also to work with other space agencies. So
yeah,
the exciting thing is to get to engage with the other space agencies that are partnering with New Zealand or that we might want to partner with. And then just providing back into, it is part of, Space Agency is part of a government ministry, so providing a bit of technical advice into those who don't have a big background, bit of translation, I think, sometimes it can be really helpful. So it's really exciting, and I feel like I'm now getting this great balance, like I said, of not a, incredible amount of technical work doing myself, but drawing on that technical background I have to help with the other aspects of the Space Agency around policy development, engagement, sector, sector development pathways as well. So it's great. I'm really enjoying
it. Yeah, sounds like you've got like lots of responsibility. it's really exciting. So again, for the benefit of the audience, can you give a little bit of a summary of what the New Zealand Space Agency's role and responsibilities are in the current New Zealand space industry?
So the New Zealand Space Agency is really a part of the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment. So it is it's actually got a team that's not necessarily always not all of them would be always concentrating on space. We have a core group of people who work on space policy, who work on regulation, like I said, and who work in sector development. And then other parts of MB also assist. So we have people who might work in innovative partnerships, who might look at some space innovations as well as other types of industry innovations as well. So,
how big is the core team?
The core sits in around about the early 20s of full-time employees. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so it's quite a small core team, but we have like a lot of people who do part of their work is for the space agency. So and that goes from people overseas who are our science counselors in Europe or in America, to other parts of the branch that have, you know, a touch in on some of the aspects of maybe science or maybe innovation and sector development type of thing. So it is small, but we have this great resource of a very big ministry to help us along.
Yeah, that's great. And so besides really focus on, of course, launch licensing and policy, what other initiatives does the agency do?
So, yeah, you're right. We do look at three different, we have three different teams. So there is the regulatory team, that's quite clear, under the Outer Space and High Altitude Activities Act. The policy team get involved in such a broad variety of policy. They're looking at not just what's our policy for some of the technologies that might want to be launched from New Zealand, but also what is the New Zealand policy position on some of the more global issues with space, some of the interactions. And that's working with the cross-agency team as well. So, that's the wonderful thing is we have this all-of-government great team who look at all the different aspects that space touches in on. And then also the sector side. So this is where we look at ways that we really want to grow the space sector in New Zealand. It's such an exciting industry. It's an industry that didn't exist when I was coming out of engineering school. So we look at ways to do that, and that can be through some of the science and research that happens. So it's looking at things from astrobiology to astronomy to astrophysics to civil engineering that could be helpful in space exploration, and data science, so using the data that's produced from space-based systems, or sometimes it's a mixture of space-based and aviation or high altitude systems. So we work with those, with research institutes, we work with the universities, we work with the companies that are starting to do things in all of those avenues, and also looking for international partnerships. So the great way, New Zealand is a fantastic place to do space, basically. We've got, clear skies, clear marine areas. You can get up to space in an enormous range of launch azimuths. But also we've got this fantastic industry supported by, an excellent education system, excellent research, a really reactive government that is, really trying to enable, but in a safe and sustainable way, a space sector. So we're always trying to see how we can bring international partners into that to benefit the New Zealand side, by learning and sharing and doing mutually beneficial projects. And that can be from industry, so other space companies overseas, or it could be other space agencies. So, that's a huge part of the space agency as well.
Are there any current kind of programs that are happening right now?
There are some great programs. So there's some engagement that we have with the German Aerospace Research Institute. I think that's the DLR. They're called DLR. So there are some fantastic projects of research that are going in collaboration between New Zealand companies and DLR, or research institutes and DLR. So that's an amazing mutual benefit there, because some of the insights that the New Zealand side can give are fantastic, and some of the depth of research and years and years of space space work and space research that DLR can offer are just amazing. So those programs are underway. We do a lot with NASA. There's this amazing project called Rongowai, which is working with NASA around a next generation of what they call their Cygnus satellites. So it's used satellites that use GPS, the bounced back signals of GPS. They sort of intercept it and use the different ways they're bounced back to be able to monitor the natural environment. Mm. And the NASA satellites are generally monitoring for wind and cyclones, basically. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. And now New Zealand is working with NASA. We've got a team working also with Air New Zealand to put
yeah, I heard the, yeah, about this.
to put the next generation of these satellites, to try them on for the first time, working in partnership with a commercial airline,
right.
and to fly them. So Air New Zealand are going to put them on their domestic aircraft,
right.
and they'll be able to, you know, fly them, these basically validate what the satellites are seeing, but also get this phenomenal high-resolution data that can help us understand all the water monitor, all the, you know, sort of soil moisture, flood inundation pathways, so our data scientists can work with alongside NASA data scientists and look at research using all of this to help, again, for the environmental benefits of how that information can help in environmental protection, mm-hmm. or in better protection for our waterways, which is just amazing. It's a great program. And I'm sure there's others. There's lots of others.
Yeah, there's like one thing that I also remember is that isn't there also on the education side, there is a NASA internship program?
Yes, yeah. So that's really amazing. And how much do I wish that had been off when I was at university? So we do run some internships with NASA. It's been, unfortunately, like others, COVID had slightly dampened things. So we had... I think the first year was 2019 when we had some amazing students go over to NASA Ames and, for a few months do an on-site internship with NASA. And then last year we ran our first internship with NASA JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, who are the amazing people who designed the Ingenuity helicopter on Mars, which gets me very excited. So we had this fantastic intern who, unfortunately, she had to do her internship virtually, but she did an internship with JPL, and we're talking now about how we could get more internships, and there will definitely be the Ames internships when we can get through the COVID side of things. So
yeah, that's awesome. It's really fascinating opportunities actually for the younger generation. So regarding education, what types of programs is the New Zealand Space Agency doing right now to incentivize kids and students in STEM education?
So we've just actually made an announcement today that there is going to be an exhibition, Tuhura Tuarangi Aotearoa in Space Showcase.
Oh, wow.
So there's funding allocated. Otago Museum have been awarded this funding to build. It's a traveling exhibition. Mm-hmm. It's designed to be interactive. And it's going to have a sort of overarching theme of, showcasing Aotearoa New Zealand achievements in space, because, I mean, we've come amazingly far
That's
in a
awesome.
Short amount of time. But also it's about showing, how space is involved in everyday life, and just really inspiring kids to, think about a career in space, and also to, show them, there's a really good reason to keep on with your STEM studies, with science, technology, engineering and mathematics studies, and that it's got these great pathways inside New Zealand that you can take STEM into a really exciting career.
Awesome.
And there's also, I think, for teachers, and actually for anybody, there's also going to be some online resources in the Science Learning Hub on MBE's Science Learning Hub. So that's also been announced,
right.
I think, today, that there's funding for these space online resources, which would be... I know that, I've got some friends with some kids who would love to get involved in that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's worth a look too. So lots of incentive and lots of ways to try and engage with kids at a young age and keep them focused on STEM and get them excited about space.
Great.
Yeah.
And so actually, one of the more popular questions that people ask is like, how do you become a New Zealand Space Agency employee? For you, how did you apply and
right.
how did you get the job?
Well, for me, I mentioned that I worked in international relations. So I worked for Foreign Affairs, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade for a while. And worked in space policy for Foreign Affairs, working hand in hand with the Space Agency, and got to learn more about the wider stuff the Space Agency did. And my passions really aligned with some of the wider stuff that was going on around industry.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was a real decision. Quite interestingly, but when I joined Foreign Affairs, I'd been overseas deployed in Korea. I didn't even hear about us having a space sector before I joined Foreign Affairs. It was only when I was in Foreign Affairs I learned about the Space Agency and I learned about all the industry. So I took the advantage of, sort of having had a background in space and being involved in that, I told you, that cross-agency, engagement on space, and showed my level of understanding of what was happening in the New Zealand industry and applied for a role that was open in the regulatory team. So that, married with my skills from engineering,
right.
it was just a good fit for the regulatory side at the time. Applying.
The question would be great for you to clarify is that do you always just need a science or engineering background, or in terms of the 20 plus New Zealand Space Agency employees, what are their backgrounds as well? So just to kind of like compare for other people to see whether their backgrounds fit.
So in the core of the space agency, there's an enormous variety of backgrounds. So it is most of the roles are policy advisor roles inside the space agency, and policy advisors can come from anywhere. We've got economists, we've got incredibly clever mathematics doctorate PhD holder. We've just recently had a phenomenal planetary scientist who's getting her PhD in engineering, looking at space resources, like amazing depth of background. But also we've got foreign affairs policy expertise in the group. We've got general policy specialists, policy generalists who've worked in other parts of government as well, and so just a really broad background. There's only two specialist roles in the space agency at the moment that have that sort of technical side. So there is a senior technical advisor in the regulatory team, and then my role is a specialist role with an aerospace technical background as well. So you can have really different backgrounds to come into the space agency. It's about how they apply to the type of work that the role is going to do.
Yeah. That's great to know, at least for the audience as well. So one of the other thing that I wanted to focus on as well is that I know that you're a huge advocate for women in aerospace and women in engineering. So just wanted to check, what are the opportunities available today for girls and women like in New Zealand who are interested in space and aerospace that you can recommend?
So I think the opportunities in New Zealand are the same for men and for women. I think what we just want to try and see is ways to try and make it a more attractive career pathway for women to take up. I think that the courses that are being offered by the universities now, the University of Canterbury and University of Auckland, are just so much more targeted. And so for me, if I was coming into university now, I'd be so excited at what I could do in there. Mm. To be able to do a mechatronics degree, to be able to have a postgraduate in aerospace from University of Auckland that focuses on areas that are helpful to move straight into industry. So there's courses, undergraduate papers that are really focused on aerospace. So all of those opportunities are there. The work afterwards, so getting out into the workforce, there's so much that you could do. And I focus on the aerospace engineering side of it because that's obviously my background. Yeah. And there are now so many different companies. When I came out, the options were an airline or the Air Force.
Yeah.
You still have those, and they're still great career pathways. But now you have space launch companies. Yep. You have you could be designing in-space craft. So these could be satellites. These could be aspects of a spacecraft. There are so many different things that are happening in New Zealand. And what we want to try and do is just show more women how great those careers could be in industry, and want to work with industry to make sure that their workplaces are, welcoming to women, that there's there's support, there's a culture that is going to enable a woman to come in and experience all these fantastic things, but also have this really clear ability to have an advancing career, and not to experience some barriers that may have been there in different times, or that some cultural issues that may have previously stopped women from succeeding in some of these workplaces. So we hope that, and we see great things in industry. We know the programs are there, and it's really about like making sure that any barriers that are still there, trying to work with the sector in total. And this is a personal thing for me right now, trying to work with the sector in total, to try and see how do we, what are the stoppers at the moment? Why don't we have as many management level aerospace engineers who are female as we do male. But I would say the same for the ethnic diversity. Why don't we have Māori and Pacifica engineers as in the sorts of representation you would expect to see? So there's definitely there's obviously some reasons why it's maybe not seen as an attractive pathway. I think a lot of the barriers are coming down, especially in New Zealand. But, you know, I think it needs an all-of-sector approach, basically.
So related to that, with in terms of career pathways and especially on the education side as well, you know, if you had a wish list of, like, what other potential opportunities or incentives we could create, kind of like in the existing either educational system or opportunities, what would those be?
Oh, that's an interesting one. So I think for me, and I was having a chat to some of the team about what could we do to try and take down some of these, even if they're just perceived barriers, but try and make this, you know, a smoother career pathway. And I talked about mentors. And I was incredibly lucky when I was a very junior engineer to have some fantastic mentors. And one in particular I'd like to shout out to is Warner Cowan. He was my mentor in the Royal New Zealand Air Force. He's a Māori aerospace engineer. No longer, sadly, works in aerospace engineering, but just, you know, as a mentor, he was fantastic. I had some other mentors through later stages of my career, but none of them were female. And so I think if we just had that visibility and also in positive engagement of more senior females, if there is a way to try and have that, that culture of, you know, the managers being male and there's a lot of juniors in who are female, if we could try and redress the balance somehow and have people be able to see women in senior roles.
Right.
And also have, you know, engagement with women in senior roles as well. I think that's probably a great step forward. It needs some work because we don't have a wealth of senior female engineers across aerospace in New Zealand. So it needs ways to try and get women into the senior roles. The mentor programs are coming. There's a fantastic initiative by Aerospace Christchurch for mentoring, which I'm part of, so I'm looking forward to being able to mentor someone.
Yeah, I also
signed
up as well. So
that's great. So mentoring, I think all of these programs are there, and we just, as a collective, just need to try to find ways to get that representation through into management. And once you have more women in senior roles, things that can be barriers around culture, as I've experienced, they do disappear when you have more women in senior roles. You get that visibility to juniors and they stop seeing a stop for them. You know, they only see a progression because they can see someone else who's progressing too. So that's my personal take on it. This is not a position of any the space agency or anything, but I'm sure that you know they're incredibly supportive for these sorts of things as well. So and that I think it needs a sector-wide solution and working together.
Yeah.
So it is great to see some of the initiatives by industry. There's, you know, a couple of really fantastic programs that industry are putting out. Mentoring by Aerospace Christchurch, and just love all of the programs that the Education Institute's putting together. So that the universities are doing that is showing them, giving them more targeted education into aerospace so that women can see that that is the way their career can go immediately and they don't sort of get lost in this generalist that could, you know, go towards a career path that actually is very attractive to them.
Awesome. So the last section for the interview is I normally ask for, you know, just general recommendations as well. But basically in general, with our audience, most likely people who are really interested in space, but kind of like just doesn't know quite yet how to get into it. So what would your recommendations be to an individual who is interested today in pursuing a career or a pathway?
So there is, the Space Agency's got a fantastic careers page now on our website.
Yes.
So if you go to the Space Agency website, it's mb.gov.nz/science-and-technology/space. So it's a long pathway. But we have a lot of resources there. So there's a careers in space page, which is has been like amazingly set up and linked through to different education and training institutes. So it's not just about degree training as well. People need to, you know, have practical skills too. We need the people who can build the space launch vehicles. We need the people who can build the satellite vehicles as well. So there's trade training links too. But there's beyond engineering. So I am obviously the super advocate for aerospace engineering. But there's so many different career pathways in space, from geoscience through to astronomy, astrobiology. Like I said, there's amazing civil engineering developments that might be used in some of our, you know, off-world exploration, like lunar exploration and stuff. There's just a wealth of different ways of getting into the space sector. So that webpage gives you a great idea of the type of qualifications that you could gain and that can help you get in. There's also sort of a page there that has, you know, the latest goings on in the New Zealand space sector. There's a couple of links in there. So it's a great place to keep looking at. It shares some industry developments, shares some research developments. So yeah, having a good play around on the New Zealand Space Agency website pages is a great way to look in. And then there's some other, like Aerospace Christchurch does a great job of promoting different things that are happening in the industry. That's probably my first two go-tos.
Awesome. Yeah. Just to add, if there's any, like, beyond those resources, is there any, like, book that you would recommend? Or
Everything I would look at is generally just interest stuff. So I don't know. I mean, I'm an avid reader of space news. So I just love to keep up to date with what's going on globally. So the spacenews.com website is a fantastic resource for, gosh, some of the amazing advances in space industry and also in the global space exploration programs. But also I would say, you know, for inspiration, I'm a bit of an Instagram fan, and NASA have a fantastic Instagram account that they have amazing photos and stories and things that will just inspire people. The International Space Station has a phenomenal Instagram account too, so... If you're interested in what sort of science is going on in space right now, they put some awesome videos and like amazing blow your mind photos up there. So it's great resources.
Awesome. So I guess any parting words to those who might be interested in pursuing the same career path as you have specifically? Any recommendations?
I would say, especially to young people, is even if you can't see it yet in New Zealand, if there is a job that you want in space, keep trying, because you never know where the space sector might go in New Zealand. And, you know, that job, you might be the first one, but, you know, by the time you get to, you know, work level, there might already be that job available. So if you can dream it, keep chasing it.
Awesome. That's a great statement to end the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Emmeline. It's been great.
Thanks, Kate, for sharing your thoughts and insights to the New Zealand community and beyond. It was a pleasure learning from you. To our audience, thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like our work and would like to support us, please check us out on spacebase.co. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.